Yeah. Okay, good. I need to work on that a lot today.
Okay.
And get
recorded
the right
live.
Stuff visible for you guys.
Okay.
Okay, so Rick is here.
There he is.
Yeah, he is sort of. He's getting everything set up here. Hang on just
okay.
a minute.
Well, the first question, Rick, is really, really, really long. But we don't have very many questions overall.
So why don't you start reading it, and I'll tell you when to stop, okay?
Okay. It's pretty long. It says, Rick, I'm reposting what I asked about last week because I still have questions that didn't get answered before. Pardon me. I need to know how to respond in a way that might be helpful. I am at a total loss. Nothing has worked so far. Part of me just wants to give up and move on, but there is also still a part of me that wants to see our marriage healed. He just wants to do what he feels comfortable doing and thinks I should let that be good enough. I can't get him to talk about anything affair-related enough for me to even get my head wrapped around what really happened. When I try asking questions, I get a lot of, I don't know, I don't remember, glossed over, minimized answers. Then he finishes off with a big smile, but I sure do love you now. This is supposed to make everything all better, and it's my fault that it doesn't. Hello, I agree with what you said about the fact that he is flooding and has issues to work through that don't have anything at all to do with the affair. But I can't do any of that for him. He is so not willing to read anything, talk to his mentor, do any program, or talk to anyone about anything other than talking to me every once in a while, and only as long as he doesn't start feeling too uncomfortable about it. Whenever that happens, he just explodes all over the place, and it's not pretty. He is, however, very happy with pretend normal and seems to even think this is real life, as good as it gets. I'm at the place where I don't even feel that close to him anymore and sometimes feel like it would be really easy for me to just walk away and never look back. I don't really want this, but I'm so worn out from all the games and all the waiting for us to get real. It's not that I don't love him. I do. But it's just not the same kind of love that it used to be. It's almost an empty sort of love these days. Pretend normal is sucking the life out of me, and I have been very unsuccessful trying to explain that to him in a way that he can understand and at the same time won't trigger him to explode. If you can please just scan over my question from last week for background info, especially the part in bold at the end. Thanks for all you do. So then she recopied what was there last week, and it's at least that long as well. Do you want me to go ahead and read it too?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Rick, we are several years out from discovery of my husband's affair with a much younger work assistant and was an emotional affair for a number of years before becoming physical. He is still unwilling to admit that there was anything going on until maybe shortly before the sexual part started. At that point, I discovered the sex. We ended up separating. Almost 2 years later, we decided to give it another try and have now been back together for 3+ years. My husband tells me he is sorry for all the pain and hurt his affair caused, and I believe he really is. However, the big problem for me is that he is not willing to talk to anyone or get any help in dealing with affair recovery. He tells me that he is dealing with so much guilt and shame, and since he doesn't know how to pay back for all the hurt and pain he caused me, that all he can do is just try to make sure my car is always clean and he is doing most of the housework and stuff so I don't have to worry about that since I am currently recovering from shoulder surgery. This is all wonderful, and I do appreciate all that he does for me. He is also treating me way better than he ever has in the past 26 years of our marriage. Unless I have a trigger and any of my anger or other emotions over all of this happen to come out, I actually feel that I am making him happy. He loves me. Heck, he even likes me too and tells me so. However, if anything I do or say makes him feel at all uncomfortable, then the tide instantly turns the other way. At this point, I actually feel that his love for me is very conditional, almost like he loves me only when I make him feel good about himself. It seems that I have not done a very good job of explaining why it is important that we get some help and actually get this stuff out of the darkness and into the light of God's truth where it can be looked at, processed, and worked through. I want a marriage that is healed, not one that exists in the land of pretend normal. I can survive like this for a little while, but I don't even want to think about spending the rest of my life this way. I believe I would die an ugly, slow, and very painful death from the inside out. At this point, I am focusing on my own issues, codependency, etc., and God is working in my own heart and life in an amazing way. but I need to know how I should respond when he keeps telling me and point out over and over all that he is doing to pay back and to be such a wonderful husband now. I have no desire to offend him or anything like that, but I do need him to understand that all the doing in the world will not take the place of working through what has happened. Any thoughts?
Okay.
And I thankfully don't think that she's on the call today. Let me check.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
No, she's at work.
Here's the problem. It's not, in the long run, an issue of penance that allows someone to feel safe, nor is penance ultimately, when he talks about paying back, that's more of a penance sort of model. I'm going to try to atone for what I've done by doing good things. But penance potentially does nothing. I mean, it depends on the person, but in this situation, it sounds like it really does nothing to help create a marriage of safety, a marriage of authenticity. It actually allows you, and I think she put it very well, that pretend normal is sucking the life out of me. And in reality, pretend normal, where someone doesn't really take responsibility and address the issue, increases the potential or the probabilities of relapse in the future. I'm not saying that he will relapse, but I can tell you that without his fully accepting the problem, seeing the problem, living around the problem, understanding what he's doing, unless he figures out a way to live and finds out what's going on with him, he's always at risk of repeating. Now, he may be offended when I say that, but, if there's a problem, you can never solve a problem by the same process that created it. That's something that Albert Einstein said. And, all he knows to do at this point is how he's tried to handle things in the past. That's the same process. And without coming up with a new process, ultimately that problem is never going to be – there's never going to be a solution for that problem. And his failure to address that certainly leaves you in a very difficult situation. And – so you ultimately have several choices. If you have gone through the 911 marriage course,
No, she hasn't, Rick.
Okay, she has not.
No.
Oh boy, I wish she had, because
I'm sure she wishes she had too.
She's been through Harboring Hope, and I think she was hoping that she could go through 911 with her husband.
Right. Yes.
And he's been and cooperative, so
yes,
that's why she's waited.
Right. Well, and the problem, the relapse prevention addresses this a little bit, because in the cycle of change, he's almost in a pre-contemplative state now, and not in even a contemplative state or in a determination state. I mean, he's saying that there's really not a problem. I'm just going to pay back for the damages that I've done. And when someone's in a pre-contemplative state, again, they're vulnerable to something happening again. I would hope, and I do understand that the guy's flooding. I've said it. I believe that. I know that he has really intense shame. But again, the shame is the energy that actually tends to create relapse to begin with, because, again, we're trying to solve a problem with the same energy or the same process that created the problem to begin with, and there's just no – it makes him incredibly vulnerable. My suggestion, I think at this point, since you said this twice, I need to know how to respond in a way that might be helpful. I think that you need to let him know specifically what you need that you're not looking for penance. You're looking for change. You're not looking for penance. You're looking for safety. And if he's not able or unwilling to at least explore that with you, then you're going to need to make a decision in the long run whether or not you really want to continue on in this relationship. And if you do continue on the relationship, you need to go into it, I think, with understanding where he's at and what his limitations are. And this would, to me, would be a lot like an alcoholic. I mean, the spouse of an alcoholic who's married to an alcoholic who's quit drinking, but is now a dry drunk. And I can, again, I know he's doing a lot of great things in the marriage, and I think that that's, you know, I appreciate his heart, but if it's not what you need, and I would almost say from the model we work from, it also leaves you at risk, you probably need to get a little more assertive about what you need, and hopefully, and I would tell him that very straight up, you know, this is what I need. I need you to do this. And if you can't give me this, then I'll need to make a decision whether or not I can actually stay in the relationship or right. whether I want to. Yes.
This is Wendy.
Yes,
and
Wendy.
This is somebody I went through Harboring Hope with, and she had talked to me this weekend about talking to you, you know, with question, you know, if you had any questions. The thing is that when she says anything to him, then he becomes extremely angry with her. And what he did with her earlier was when she said something to him right after her surgery, he made it very clear that he would walk out and leave her if she pursued anything. So
so she that, needs to, when she does that, then she needs to be willing to give up the relationship.
Right.
And I don't know, you might, she... The thing she might do is she might write him a letter
mm-hmm.
because he might be able to read a letter and not flood as badly. And if he was going to write her a letter, one of the things I suggest is that she start off talking about his good intentions and what she wants him to, what she ultimately needs from him. What he's doing good, and then why she needs something else from him. And hopefully, you know, he'll do something. But if not, if she's unwilling to live with the risk of where he's at, then she's probably, she might need to be the one to walk out of the marriage. As hard as that is to say, it seems like that might be the way that one goes. Hopefully he'll listen to her and do something.
Okay, well, I think you've answered what her... She just wanted to know what she could specifically, you know, say or do that would, you know, be a positive thing, and that was what she was looking for.
Yeah, I mean, she certainly can state her desire to be with him
mm-hmm.
and her desire to engage with him, and yet it's okay to have some bottom-line issues that, you know, just like it's okay with him. I mean... The other piece that you might want to consider when doing this is share not so much what you need, but you can also share your dreams, kind of the underlying dreams. And so if you share kind of what your heart is in terms of why this is so important according to kind of what your dreams are of life, then also invite him to write back kind of his dreams of what life are at this point and what, why not doing this, try to find out, understand the deeper why. What's the dream? What is this blocking for him if he were to do something like this, if he'll dialogue on it? If he won't dialogue on it, then you're at a really difficult place. And, yeah, I hope he'll do something, because otherwise you do need to make a decision. And people do relapse. And in this area, people can relapse a lot. And so I just want you to be sure you take good care of yourself and certainly be prepared for what might happen if he chooses. If you choose to stay and he doesn't do anything, that's great. But just be aware that, you know, how you want to respond to round two and pre-plan that when things are still pretty calm, and try to keep a heart for your sake of forgiveness. Hopefully being able to see him as someone that is still really ill, and understanding that he may need a couple of relapses before he finally comes to the place where he recognizes he can't control it and he's going to have to get some help for it. And people certainly do that. So that's not a bad thing to do. It's just, it's a hard thing to do, but it's a possible thing to do. Okay, next. We are 2.5 years post-initial discovery, 6 months post-final, I hope. I've been through Harboring Hope and we're coming down to the finish line in 911 marriage. At discovery, I started having dreams, mostly nightmares, and I'd wake up. This was when I could sleep at all, thinking my life was much worse than the nightmare. Now, over the past month and a half, my dreams have totally ramped up. I sleep, on the whole, better than I was initially, but my dreams just are relentless. I don't think I've ever dreamt like this as an adult. It is more like I was a child, dream after dream after dream, but without the consolation I used to get from my dad. I want to sleep, but when the dream maker begins, and I'm exhausted by the dreams, why now? What has set the dream machine in motion? Okay, with dreams, a couple of things can actually set the dream machine in motion. There are several medications that play a huge part in dream disturbance. So the first thing you want to check is dream disturbance a side effect of any medications you might be taking?
I don't take anything. I take no medication.
Okay, so for anybody else listening to this in the future, though, there may be any, if you're taking any type of anti-Parkinson's disease, any type of dopamine antagonist, any type of SSRI types of things, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, antidepressants, those can cause dream disturbance. So don't always assume that it's something unconscious. A lot of times it's medically induced, and so that's the first part. Second, usually the dreams begin to really kick up when things begin to get safer and you come out of crisis mode. The way I like to look at dreams personally, and the way I try to almost interpret and understand dreams, is really as a problem-solving mode. And one of the things you want to look for in dreams is really about themes. And you'll find that even though the place or the situation may change, oftentimes there's always a common theme to the dream. The theme being someone has just left you, the theme being or being left and being alone, the theme being sometimes being exposed. But oftentimes it's the same thing over and over and over and over. So that is the unconscious mind's attempt to problem solve. So it keeps like testing you and throwing the same thing at you over and over and over again. And if the thing that's a little strange is when the dreams are causing sleep disturbance, because usually dreams don't cause sleep disturbance at all. What you're describing almost sounds more like a night terror sort of situation.
They aren't so, scary dreams. They're just, they're usually things involving his emotional affair person, that he's moved that person into our house, and that I'm not allowed to be where she is in the house, but I have to be willing to keep her living in the house, or you know, things like that. They're not necessarily nightmares, no.
Okay, so theme. In the type of theme you're talking about there is a theme, and the way I look at it, that's a positive dream theme. And it's positive in the sense that what he's doing is he's out in the open, and it's again, it's not the exact content, but he's exposing what was there. So what the unconscious mind is doing to you is, I think, or at least what I would typically begin to look at it, and I'd have to reinforce this over a bunch of dreams.
Sure.
But it's almost like now that he's being open and honest, how are you going to respond? Now that you see what was going on, how are you going to respond? It's no longer that you have no idea what's out there in the dark. Now it's right there. And again, it's not about the affair partner. It's about how do you respond to the knowledge of, you know, it's there, it's in the house, it's open, it's happened. Now what? And that's a very common dream. Now, one of the things that you may find, because I find that dreams like you're describing begin to go on a progression, and it'll be interesting to see how they evolve over time. Eventually, you may find that the affair partner comes and visits and leaves. Eventually, you may find that you develop a relationship with the affair partner. Who knows? I've seen them go many different directions, and eventually the affair partner is gone. But it's really not about the affair partner. The theme of that sort of dream is much more about our ability, or you're kind of being faced with reality of what was, but now you are being faced directly with reality of what was. The other thing you might want to consider that causes dream disturbance is also hormone imbalance. So if your hormones are out for any reason, that will also create some dream disturbance and cause you to be much more aware. Hot flashes, for instance, have a huge impact on sometimes on dream disturbance, and also on how you feel when you wake up the next morning. Because if you're dealing with any type of those power surges, they certainly interrupt your deep REM sleep or your deep sleep, and will cause you to feel much less rested. Are you feeling really tired when you wake up?
No. Mm-mm. Not physically.
Okay.
I mean, I feel emotionally thrashed from dealing with the dream, but I don't. You know, I wake up. You know, I'm okay. I have energy. I mean, not fantastic energy, but no, I'm not tired when I wake up.
Right. And the thing that, you know, you talk about, you used to get consolation from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, again, in the unconscious part, it's like you're having to face this one alone. And
well, the thing that's interesting about my dad was that when I was little, you know, you're little, you have night terrors, nightmares, all sorts of things. And he would come in and he'd sit on the bed and he'd talk to me. And he told me, finally, he says, you know, if when you go to bed, right before you go to sleep, you think about what you would like to dream about, you know, pick something that you really love, or, you know, something that sounds fun, but choose that for your dream. And I started doing that. And when I did that, I didn't ever have any nightmares anymore. You know, my whole life I didn't have, you know, because if I'd wake up in the night, I'd think, oh, what do I want to dream about now? You know, and I would do that. It's not working so well now, you know,
well,
that particular thing.
Well, I would say, right, but what you're saying is you're still not having any nightmares. I mean, they're disturbing and
they're
not like...
Yeah, no, they're not. No, my life is the nightmare. my dreams are safer than my daily life, I think.
Right. You know, one of the things you might do is if you remember the dream, write the dream down, and then looking at the larger theme...
Mm-hmm.
Of, okay, so everything's out in the open. And I really think it's probably the dream is being caused more by your own ambivalence about what you want to do with the relationship now that you see everything that was. I think once you've resolved in your heart what you ultimately want in the marriage, you'll find the dreams go away. Because what's probably at the core of the dreams is you see it. Now, what are you going to do with it? And I think it's about you're not knowing what you really want to do in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And journaling, writing the dream down, and then writing out when you're conscious. if you know what you want for the marriage, kind of telling yourself what you want for the marriage. If you don't know, it may work, as weird as it sounds, to give yourself a timeline so you don't have to think about it for a season, and that may actually let the dream go away if you can really mean it. I don't know. It'd be worth trying. That you're not going to make a decision about the marriage until here. You're not even going to think about making a decision about the marriage until here. And so now you've made a decision not to make a decision, and that may stop the dreams.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Worth giving it a shot.
Yes, you bet. Let's see if that works. At what point does a hurt spouse say, enough already, enough is enough, wanting to give the marriage a chance but not wanting to spend the rest of life waiting to feel safe? The only thing I would say about this particular question, and that's really a great question, I always say that once you really get into recovery, you want to probably give it about, where you get to final disclosure, you want to give it about 18 months to see if you can come to that place to feel safe. I would also say that you've got to clearly understand that there's a big difference between feeling safe and knowing you're safe. And if it's a pretty darn good bet that you know where the other person's at and you know where their heart is, you can also begin to kind of deal with those feelings and within yourself begin to address the fear. And one of the things I do when it comes to addressing fears that you feel like are unfounded would be to write down what is the fear on one side of a page, and on the other side of the page, I'll have people write down what they know to be true. And you always, if you behaviorally begin to say, okay, here's the fear, here's truth. Here's the fear, here's truth. Here's the fear, here's truth. Now, you have to know that the fear is unfounded, and you have to kind of know the truth to do that. Because I don't think you want to say that if you're in a situation where somebody's not in recovery and they're not working their program, to say, well, the truth is I'm safe. I don't know that that would necessarily be the truth. So it would be difficult to fight a founded fear. I mean, you certainly need to answer first whether or not is this fear real or not. But if it's not real, then begin to address that fear with the double column thing and what is really true. Okay, my wife is amazing. She has navigated my betrayal and sex addiction like a destruction derby driver. She has a lot of internal and external damage and believes she's worn down. She doesn't feel she has time for repairs and the repair work I'm doing, but a single wrench and a broken hammer is a little too late. And so she doesn't feel like she has the time for repairs. And the repair work I'm doing with a single wrench and a broken hammer is a little too late. I'm sad where I found the perfect race winner, yet my efforts to repair fall short. Any suggestions? Yeah, you know, for the unfaithful spouse, I so strongly believe that it's about your own getting out of denial and you working your own program. And in reality, there aren't any shortcuts. And if you're working program and you set up accountability and you're going to meetings or anyway, you're doing what you need to do to heal, that is actually about all that I would know to tell you that you can really do. And be faithful to that. Where you're going to get into trouble is if you focus too much on your mate. I mean, certainly you want to try to help your mate heal. That's not the point. You've got damage and you're trying to help them, but you can't necessarily fix your mate. I mean, that is something that they have to do, and you can certainly do everything possible to assist them in that process, but you can't take responsibility for their healing. And just like you're going to recover and come out of this thing as you, you know, begin to look at yourself and surrender your own heart and quit being so blooming egocentric and try to become far more, you know, God-centric or higher power-centric or whatever you want to say, is you begin to grow and surrender and let go in the same way your mate kind of has to do the same thing. And if you get into making your mate your higher power, you know, that's really, that's also got its own danger. I'm glad that you found the perfect race winner. The fact of the matter is, though, if, you know, our mates choose to stand with us and to stay with us after everything we've done, in the long run, that's a gift that we don't deserve. And that is something about love. And we are amazing. Those of us who have been blessed enough to have our mates stay with us, that is, that's probably the largest blessing we ever receive, which made me think of one thing you might do for your mate. You might want to let them know on a daily basis, as difficult as all of this is, how much you appreciate the fact that they're still with you given everything that's occurred. And sometimes while it doesn't make the repair work go any faster, it certainly makes, at least they know that you appreciate what they're going through as a result of you. And I think that can be really helpful for them. And so just letting them know on a, almost a, an every, in fact, not almost, I'd let them know on an everyday basis how much you appreciate everything and being helpful, but also you've got to make it safe for them by doing your own work, because if you're not still focused on you, you'll never be safe enough for them, and so that will for sure kill the deal. So those are, that's a great question. Do your work so at least if they're able to come back around, you can be somebody that would be good for them to be with, and that's the part you really control, and then answering, helping them in the ways that they request. See, Rick, in our situation, we've been married for 36 years, together for 3 before that. Essentially, I was married to him, but he was not to me, although I didn't understand that at the time and didn't until the last couple of years. I was a person who was fully engaged in a sexual life, and he was not. I didn't understand that until recently either. I've spent the last 36 years of my life working on a non-existent relationship, since a relationship has to go two ways, giving and receiving. I put everything I had into that relationship. Now we are in 911, and I'm working once again, but I don't have much left to work with. We were at a concert this weekend, and I was listening to the words turn, 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 about the seasons of life. We lived the season of building up. Just because I was working on building us up doesn't mean that he was. The time of our life, we were supposed to be building on our love for one another, and our relationship was only used by one. I've done all these things that one does when one loves. I kept my love for him alive and active, and my desires for him as a sex partner. I was in my late 50s and still felt excited by him and was an ardent lover. That took work. I don't think I have it in me again. I know how much work love takes. I've been there for a long time. Where do I go now? One thing that, bye Margie, by the way, we'll miss you. One thing that I would say, for a number of years, you were willing to carry the load for the relationship. And it was interesting, because you were willing to carry the load, the fact is the relationship was able to continue kind of like maybe only on one lung instead of two lungs, but at one level, someone was keeping that relationship alive. And, you know, it may be at this point that you don't have anything to give back in the relationship. And if that's the case, to me, much of what you're going to need to be able to do is maybe let him carry it, and hopefully, you know, he's going to be willing to kind of have the love and be the one building in the relationship and working on the relationship, understanding that there's nothing there for you to give at this point. And if he will do that, then it actually provides the two of you opportunity, or at least you a chance to heal. And over time, I think you'll find that those feelings begin to come back. Again, I think you're awfully early. I know you've been in recovery for a while, but some things are just so blooming difficult that it really takes a serious amount of time to begin to have one's heart come back. One of the things that I would suggest just as a tip in this situation, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, is that try to find ways that when you are together, you can at least choose to try to enjoy the time together and make enjoyment more of a focus. And I think, you know, keep an eye open for how he's doing and see what's happening. I mean, after 36 years or 38 years, what, 40 years, if you really, I guess 39 years, that's an awful lot to give up. And if his heart is true and if he's really changing, you may actually find what you were really looking for in the long run. But it's still going to be work, but hopefully he's the one that's going to be kind of leading the way, and he'll be pulling you along. So I guess, where do I go now? I would say you've got two choices. One, you know, you can just disengage, or two, you can sit and go your own separate way and get out of the relationship, or two, you can say, okay, it is what it is. Now let's see how God can redeem something that, you know, is a train wreck here and just be a part of a huge miracle. I'm always an adrenaline junkie, so I like to watch miracles happen. And I'm a risk taker, so it's not a hard thing for me. Some people just aren't risk takers, and they're just too tired to do anything. And the desire really is gone. In those situations, what you don't want to do when desire is dead is try to force yourself to do something. But if you can allow yourself to rest and work your own program and just take care of yourself and from afar watch your mate and stay safe, again, your heart may begin to come back. But I think you said probably a time limit, and then at the end of that time, evaluate. But don't try to look at it on an everyday basis, but instead, again, set, like I answered on the last question, set a time out in the future. When that time comes, see if it feels any different. In fact, something that might be helpful as an exercise, someone wrote me a letter once not to be opened in 5 years. And I'm not suggesting 5 years as the time.
Good thing.
But it was interesting because for the 5 years, I didn't open the letter. And I, you know, it was sitting by my desk, and so I was really anxious to open it 5 years later, you know, and it was really disappointing because it wasn't that big a deal, which I thought, man, that was not worth waiting 5 years for. However, I think if you write yourself a letter today with kind of where you're at and how you feel, and then write your and say, okay, this is to be opened on such and such a date, you may be able to go back if you really capture in words or in a painting or in a drawing the state of your heart at this point and how you feel about everything. When you open that letter at the predetermined date where you're going to begin to try and decide, because you're not going to try and decide between here and there, but you're just going to see if your heart will heal, then you, I think, will be able to get a better sense of if there's progress, if there's not progress, are we going somewhere, are we not going somewhere, and stay very focused, you know, during that time period, just on your own recovery stuff, doing your own, you know, fearless and moral inventory, and your own making sure that you're keeping your side of the street clean and praying for God's will in your life and the power to carry that out. And, you know, just try to grow yourself in the meantime, and then we'll see what happens.
Oddly enough, when probably about a year ago, year and a half ago, I started drawing every day. I would do these mandalas. They're a circle, and then you just draw in it, you know, how you're feeling that day. And I did that for a couple months, and then I started doing other things. I started, you know, doing sketches, and I was journaling, and, you know, I was trying anything. And
right.
But I came across the drawings. Well, I had to do something with them, and you know, there is a big difference from where I was, and that was before I had ever come to ARC or anything, and I realized, you know, how totally broken I felt at the time, and, you know, it was pretty, well, some days it was pretty dark, and other days it was pretty, you know, it looked pretty emotionally volatile, a lot of red and flames and things. But, you know, yes, you're right, that does help. And I have been thinking I need to do something like that again, because...
Right. I think that it's almost like as we go through time, where we are or where we were is distorted by our current situation, or it all seems kind of relative to us. That's why I think if you can draw some and see the difference now versus then, it becomes more tangible and concrete, and I think it makes it easier to see the progress.
Well, one of the things that was funny was at one point I was, I'd read something about somebody doing, you know, like a daily journal, only cartoon style with little stick figures and stuff. So I was doing that every day, and Denny was kind of getting a kick out of it, and he would look at it and, you know, see what I'd drawn for the day. And the one day, we had had something he had said or done had hurt me, and I had tried to explain it to him, and he'd gotten very upset with me. And so anyway, I drew it in the cartoon and then showed it to him, and when he saw it in the cartoon, he says, "Now I know exactly, you know, what you were talking about." Whereas, you know, we'd spend an hour and a half going around, and it, you know, took him 2 minutes of looking at the little cartoon figures to be able to see it. So that was a good thing too.
Yeah, that would be a very good thing. That'd be a good thing. I think that's the end of our questions for the day. Let's see, we've still got some people online. Does anybody else have a question they would like to bring up live? Or is everybody going to get time to go back to work early? Okay, well, with that being the case, we will be back next Monday for more fun and excitement. For all you who joined the call tonight or today, thank you very much. And I will talk with you next week. To healing, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay.